Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. Today is Wednesday, June 28th, 2017, starting at 4:09 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 113th or 114th episode. You can find out more information about the podcast at theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. You can also find out information about how to subscribe and support the production of future episodes by becoming a patron through our page on Patreon. So today we're going to be doing the forecast episode for July of 2017, and we're actually doing an experiment because we're live streaming this episode on Facebook at the same time that we're recording it. Joining me today are Kelly Surtees and Austin Kopic. Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Actually, fantastic. We've been working on webcam issues for about 40 minutes, so off to an excellent start.
60 minutes. We were actually supposed to start an hour ago, but we had some webcam issues, but I think we've worked it out at this point. We have our recordings going. Kelly, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I just grabbed the link and I'm posting it on Facebook now. But yeah, I'm great. I'm just back from a couple of weeks holiday and it feels like it's been forever since we've all chatted. And I'm really excited to talk about July. There's a lot going on this month.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to send this link out to all of our subscribers. This was kind of a last minute spur of the moment type thing. But we'll see how it goes. We'll be able to share some charts and we're going to eventually get into the forecast and talk about the astrology of July of 2017. And I'm also going to share one auspicious electional chart that Lisa Scheim provided us with for the most auspicious election she could find for starting new ventures in July. So before we get to that point, if anyone's watching on Facebook, please like and share this post so that we can get it out there to as many people as possible. And if this works out, maybe we'll make it a sort of regular thing in future months. All right. So what has it been, like 6 weeks? I think we recorded the last forecast episode, what, in mid-May?
Mid-May before NORWAC. So it's five weeks, maybe?
Yeah, I think it was the 18th or something.
Okay, so it's been a while since we talked, so a lot has happened. So maybe we should catch up a little bit on what's been going on since mid-May, just in terms of what you guys been up to. I think, Kelly, so you said you've been traveling for the past few weeks?
Look, I attended my sister's very Leo wedding in Santorini in Greece in June. So that was wonderful and very Leo and luxury and amazing. So that's been great, but I feel like I've been away. I've never been to the Greek islands before, and it really is a long way away and a great chance to kind of totally disconnect. But I have been thinking a lot about July because I didn't take a lot of astrology stuff with me other than my ephemeris, total astro nerd. And so, yeah. And then, of course, I came home to a physical manifestation of Austin's description of the late June poop in the pool metaphor, where one of our cats had left us a little surprise on our bed. So Austin was spot on as usual with his wonderful metaphors.
Wait, thank you. I got a sort of different but still pool-oriented version of the Mercury-Mars opposite Pluto. So there were two separate instances, and both of them involved tiny, crawling, poisonous beasts, which I feel like is pretty appropriate for Mars, Mercury, and Cancer.
Totally.
So I was out in the pool and I looked over at the rocks nearby and there was a black widow. Yeah, I don't think I've ever actually seen a black widow in person before. And so that was interesting and potentially dangerous. And then the next night, or maybe it was the same night, but it was within a day, I was like, I'm going to take myself a nice bath. I like baths. I don't really like showers, but I love to soak in the tub. And so, which I believe, we've discussed before.
You have shared your love of baths.
Right. Well, we were going to have a spinoff show, right?
Where we podcasted.
Yeah. The Pisces live from the bath, or baths. But anyway, and in the bath was not a spider. There were four goddamn spiders in my tub.
Wow. Yeah,
I thought the spider people and I had an understanding. I thought we'd reached a nice truce. And so I did remove all of them forcibly, but I did not murder them brutally.
How very kind of you.
He's tough, but fair.
Well, Again, I'm trying to, you know, maintain peace between the spider people. Now, none of them have bit me, so.
I haven't bitten
any of them that I know of.
Well, that sounds eventful. And Austin, you actually switched recently on your column. You're starting to do a new Deccan series, or you're breaking it up by Deccan, right?
Yeah. I, as you know, and as a lot of people probably know, I'm really big on the Deccans. You know, the 10 degree arcs that trisect each sign. And there are 36 of them in a year. And I thought it would be more interesting to use a natural division of time like that, or a more natural division of time than the 7 day week. And so, yeah, on the sun's ingress into Cancer, which, in the older systems actually begins the Deccans, right? Think Thema Mundi, think Egyptian mm-hmm. inheritance, think flood. I published my first Deccanly, right? Weekly Deccanly. And so I don't know if I'm going to do it forever, but I'm definitely going to do one complete run of 36. Really enjoyed doing the first one, and the second one's just about done too. That'll come out either Friday or Saturday.
Awesome. That's exciting, except for it sounds like you have a huge workload in terms of writing these days, right?
Yeah, well, it just so happens that I need to get my monthly overview every single day of the month's dailies and the Deccanly all out by Saturday this week. And I'm most of the way there, but I've been sweaty at the forge with it.
Fun. So, yeah, in terms of like, you know, one of the things we sometimes do on the podcast is we talk about, since it's been a month since our last forecast episode, how some of the specific astrological combinations that we pointed out that were supposed to take place in June, if we noticed them correlate with any specific events. So have you guys noticed?
I have one, and it's actually something that we missed. And it's for the same reason that we've missed things before. We were really focused, especially Kelly and I, on the Mars Saturn opposition. And that played out, I think, very much like we expected it to. However, what we missed was that there was a Mars Saturn Antitia, contra Antitia, perfect, about a week later. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was when, like, there were things on fire and people are, you know, super unhappy. And, you know, I was like, what is going on?
Oh,
I
remember, yes.
I was like, these are supposed to be happy days. And I had like a 10-minute existential astrology crisis. And then I was like, does it just not show up? Is it something with the like a national chart or whatever? And I was like, oh, Mars and Saturn are in a perfect contra Antitia, you know, which contra Antitia is supposed to act just like an opposition. And so mm-hmm. there was like this shadow opposition, you know, I don't know, a week and a half, 2 weeks later. Anyway. So that was I've missed things before because I didn't look at the Antitia. And so that's another reminder.
Yeah, I think that was your takeaway lesson from either the last yearly forecast or the presidential election, wasn't it? That the Antitia was much more important than you expected?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Yeah, a little bit of both.
Okay. And what about you, Kelly?
I didn't learn my lesson, though.
Of always paying attention to them? Yeah, I mean, I had a similar thing where with the elections last month, I forgot that Lisa said there was this whole span earlier in June where she really would have liked to use Virgo rising and Mercury in Gemini for some of the electional charts. But there was this period where it was like exactly squaring Neptune, and she felt like that would be too problematic for the ruler of the ascendant for a lot of those electional charts. And I conveniently forgot that when I was scheduling podcast episodes for last month. And I was like, look at this great lineup of charts in the second week of June where you have Virgo rising and Mercury's in its own sign and Gemini in the 10th house. That's great. And I was completely overlooking or at least devaluing or underplaying the Neptune square. And so we recorded our first podcast of last month with my good friend Chet Sadrowski. And we recorded this great 2-hour episode on Dane Rudyar and his life and work for episode 211. And then after the 2 hours and 5 minutes, we got done, uploaded the files. I opened them up and I had my full audio file. And then I looked at his audio file and it only had the first 30 minutes of the recording. So that recording just vanished into thin air. And it's the first and only time that I've actually lost an episode of the podcast. And it was with Virgo rising Mercury ruling the ascendant and applying very closely to square Neptune. So Lisa had a very good sort of I told you so moment that we'll be talking about on the Auspicious Elections podcast that we're going to record tomorrow for patrons of the podcast.
Yeah, that was tricky because Mercury was trine Jupiter at about the same time. So it looked like there was this lovely Mercury-Jupiter aspect, which would be helpful, but the square to Neptune was happening within a couple of days. So yeah, that must have been frustrating.
Yeah, that was bad times. So I've learned, you know, we learn from every electional chart and every natal chart that we do, but that was an interesting learning experience. What did you see any things like that, Kelly, in terms of, you know, things that we had pointed out last month that you, when we actually got there, you were interested or surprised or?
Well, I think the one thing which is happening, because we're recording this just after the Mercury-Mars brouhaha in Cancer, I got an email very early this morning from Norton, my antivirus people, like software, saying there's this big malware virus that's been going around. And I thought that is very appropriate, you know, late June with this, like the attack, if you like. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a really good fit, a little bit more current, because I think I was caught up in the Mercury-Neptune square on a beach somewhere for a few weeks. But yeah, that I saw that this morning and I was like, that makes complete sense. And yeah, I had quite a few testy conversations today. So I'm happy that that little aspect is now separating.
Yeah, so we're recording this the day of the Mercury-Mars square, which Austin, I know you were a little bit hesitant to attempt to experiment with the live stream today, rightfully so. I think we didn't use like an electional chart to schedule this episode, but we just sort of threw it together. But it looks like we were smart enough to at least schedule it for later in the day after the Mercury Mars square was separating rather than earlier when it was still applying. So we at least applied some astrology to our scheduling here a little bit today.
Some intelligence.
Right. All right. So before we move on, I forgot that we were supposed to do the giveaway for this month. So I'm not doing the giveaway anymore. I'm going to stop running ads on the podcast at the beginning of each episode because that was getting a little bit tiring, but I am still doing book giveaways for patrons of the show who are on the $5 and $10 tiers. So I'm actually going to announce the winners of that later tonight once we're done recording this episode, but I just wanted to mention the two books that we're giving away. So one of them is The Astrological Works of Theophilus of Edessa, which is Ben Dykes's new book that literally just came out. You can order it on his website right now at bendykes.com. It's a translation of an 8th century work that was written in Greek by this interesting figure who was a middle figure between the Hellenistic and the medieval astrological tradition, because he was writing in Greek, but he was actually working for the Islamic Empire at the time. So he's kind of like in between the late Greek authors like Rhetorius and the early Arabic authors like Masha'Allah and Saul. And this is the first time his works have ever been translated into any modern language.
So he's pretty solidly Byzantine then.
Yeah, he's a Byzantine. He's like a Byzantine guy from Edessa who went and worked for the Arab or the Islamic Caliphate. So there's actually recordings of him using electional astrology to elect like battles and wars and stuff. And he actually left one of the texts that they translate in here is supposed to be one of the earliest texts on like astrology, electional rules for war and stuff like that.
That's interesting. Did he, do you know where he went to work for the caliph?
Well, supposedly, and this is one of the things that Ben talks about in the introduction, he actually went to Baghdad and Pingree actually makes this argument, which Ben is a little bit skeptical of, but he talks about in the introduction that Theophilus of Edessa was working in Baghdad and that he actually met Masha'Allah and that he passed him a complete text of Rhetorius to Masha'Allah, which Masha'Allah then read and incorporated into some of his works. And then that's why you have concepts like striking with a ray or hurling rays showing up in Masha'Allah in his early horary texts, like On Reception. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting and like fascinating sort of book. I'm going to give away one copy of this to one lucky patron on the $5 or $10 tier. The other giveaway, so check that out at Ben Dykes. The other one is this book I actually found at my local bookstore that I thought is really funny and I'm really enamored with. It's actually a fiction book titled The Madness of Mercury. I don't know if you can see this. So it's titled The Madness of Mercury by Connie DeMarco. And it's hilarious. I have to read you the description because I just found this at the bookstore the other day. It says, Mercury retrograde wreaks havoc on astrologer Julia Benatti. So the protagonist in this
Benatti?
Yeah, her name is Julia Benatti. It says, San Francisco astrologer Julia Benatti's life is turned upside down when she becomes the target of the city's newest cult leader. Reverend Roy of the Prophet's Tabernacle, driven out of her apartment in the midst of a disastrous Mercury retrograde period, she takes shelter with a client who's caring for two elderly aunts. One aunt appears stricken with dementia, and the other's fallen under the spell of Reverend Roy. Blah, blah, blah. It keeps going. And then it says, is the young man truly a member of the family? Can astrology confirm that? Julia's not sure, but one thing she does know is that Mercury wasn't merely the messenger of the gods. He was a trickster and a liar as well. So it's like a novel that's written with like sort of young adults in mind, and it's called A Zodiac Mystery. So it looks like it was published by like an imprint of Llewellyn, but you know, not quite the same as like Theophilus of Edessa in terms of like reading level.
Too extreme.
A little bit. Yeah, we've got a little bit of a contrast there, but it's a funny book. It's interesting to see astrology integrated, or somebody attempting to integrate astrology into like a young adult reading level type novel. And I sort of support that idea in theory, even though I haven't read the book personally. So if people want to check it out, it's titled The Madness of Mercury by Connie DeMarco. And I'm going to give away a copy of that to one lucky patron of this show who supports us on the $5 or $10 tier through our page on Patreon. You can find out more information about how to join that at theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. Any other promotional stuff that we want to mention before we get into the forecast episode? Do you guys have anything coming up?
I think so. Yeah. So I just finished the first half of my fundamentals class, the first 4 months, which obviously have to be planets, signs, houses, and aspects. And then I'm beginning the next arc, which will begin with a basic tutorial on integrating fixed stars into your astrology, and then an extensive discussion of traditional dignity, all five layers of the cake. And then we're going to do synodic cycles, and then we're going to have a month of actually integrating those. And so even though the title of the complete 8-month class is Fundamentals, there is a natural break between, you know, planets, signs, houses, aspects, and the somewhat more advanced topics that I'm going to be doing over the next 4 months. And so people can join any one of those classes, or I didn't have them packaged together, but I realized that it's actually sort of a nice four-course arc for someone who's already got, you know, planets, signs, aspects, houses down. And so I'll be sort of packaging that with a discount, and that'll go up on my website in the next couple of days.
Awesome. Sounds good. And your website is austinkopic.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. What do you got going on, Kelly?
Similar thing in that my next offering of online classes, I am doing a series on chart interpretation. So it's 3 blocks of 4 weeks. The first block of 4 weeks is just on the planets, looking at passions, problems, and potentials. So we'll be looking at what the planets are and starting the process of interpreting them in a chart. That actually starts, it's July 10th if you're in Canada or the US, and it'll be July 11th in the morning if you're in Australia. And that's the first part. The second block will be on aspects, and then the third block will be on moon phases and special configurations. And they're just going to run consecutively from now until, I think, early November, late October. So you can do all 3, or you can just do 1 block of 4, depending on where you're at. So yeah, all the info for that first block is on my website, kellysastrology.com.
Awesome. That sounds great. Let's see. And in terms of my stuff, I spent most of the past couple of months working on 2 projects. One is moving my courses over to a new course site, a new online school, which I'm calling, which is at theastrologyschool.com. So I actually moved my Hellenistic course and my electional and my horary course and all of the modules over to this new site. You can find it at theastrologyschool.com, or the course site specifically right now is at courses.theastrologyschool.com. And I'm actually, in order to sort of not commemorate, but in order to promote the new course site, I'm actually doing a 10% discount on my Hellenistic course if you sign up between now and the end of July. So just use the promo code astrologypodcast. So all one word with no space, just astrologypodcast. You get a 10% discount on my Hellenistic course if you sign up between now and the end of July. And I'm doing that actually together. It's kind of a side project together with launching or relaunching my YouTube channel and starting to produce some astrology videos at youtube.com/theastrologyschool. So all one word. And yeah, that's been kind of a hassle, like learning about lighting and learning about, you know, learning how to use a DSLR and white balance and all those other things. But I'm actually starting to get it down, and I've produced a few videos on sect, whole sign houses, benefic and malefic planets and things like that. And I'm pretty excited about doing more tutorials there. So people should check that out on YouTube and subscribe. And yeah, things are pretty exciting. Kelly, you've actually been doing a lot of live streaming lately, right?
Yeah, I back in May and April, I was doing a Facebook Live, did a few of them in a row just to try them out. And they're lots of fun. And I think we were chatting about this before the show, Chris, the power of Facebook is that it does act as a wonderful access point for everyone, where instantly everybody gets everything. So in terms of making your info or your stuff available, Facebook Live, I've been doing a bit of that, and also trying to, you know, do a little bit more on my YouTube channel, because it does seem like video is what people are really looking for going forward. So yeah, I've had to upgrade my webcam, which I was very happy to do, and that's working well. I haven't quite got to the light piece yet, Chris, so I might be tapping you for tips on that. But yeah, the video stuff is great. Austin, do you do a lot of video stuff or just in your classes?
Oh, zero.
Okay.
With no plans. I do PowerPoints. So I present material, but I have no interest in performing like that.
Okay.
All right.
So that is just not for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're gonna still drag you in here, I think, for the purpose of doing the forecast. So you'll maybe be dragged kicking and screaming into doing some video.
No, I will sullenly consent.
Okay. All right.
We're happy to have your consent, even no matter how sullen.
Awesome. Well,
fine.
So I think we've got most of the preliminary stuff out of the way. I'm just trying to think. The only other thing was that between now and last time we talked, NORWAC happened, and it was actually a great conference. There was tons of people who listened to the podcast who joined us there, some of which said it was their very first conference. And I actually really regretted in retrospect not setting up an actual meet and greet for everybody. I did a book signing and I met a lot of podcast listeners there. But Kelly, your idea of doing a meet and greet at UAC next year, I think that idea became even better after NORWAC, because there's just so many people that came up sort of at different points in the conference. But I really want to find a way to connect listeners of the podcast together when they attend a conference like this. So let's definitely plan on doing a meet and greet and maybe even recording a live episode of the podcast at UAC next year if we can pull it off.
Totally. I think that's a great idea. I think the meet and greet for sure. And if we can get Austin to deal with a live audience, that would be good.
Okay. Awesome. And so yeah, NORWAC is a great event. Thanks to all the podcast listeners that came up and said hi. Why don't we transition at this point and actually get into the actual forecast, which is the focus of our discussion today. So we're talking about the month of July and the major astrological alignments during the course of it. Should we do it in terms of prominence, or should we go through in terms of like chronologically what comes first? What do you guys feel like?
I like sequential.
Yeah. Okay. Sequential is good. In that case, what's the first thing that happens in July that you think is really important or that stands out to you guys that you want to highlight?
This is easy. Mars opposite Pluto.
Mars opposite Pluto. That's what I would say. Okay, so that happens, that aspect happens right out of the gate on around July 2nd, I think?
Yeah, it's right out of the gate. We're building into it already. You know, end of June, we've got Mercury conjunct Mars and Mercury opposite Pluto. So that, I think, look, for my money, I think it's going to be the most complex aspect of the whole month, but it definitely flavors the first week if we think about like week one, week two, week three, week four. I mean, the first 2 weeks of July, I've got this sort of Pluto theme. Well, I don't have it. That's what's happening. We've got Mars opposite Pluto in week one and then the sun opposite Pluto with the full moon conjunct Pluto in week two. So anything you want to know about Pluto in Capricorn and what it might be doing to you or your life or your chart, you're going to get examples of this or activations of this, and maybe not in the most fun way. Mars opposite Pluto, I feel like I'll turn into Austin on this one. It's intense. You're wrestling with stuff and it's not happy stuff. Stuff, you're going to become aware of stuff that you didn't know that had maybe been driving you, and that awareness and clarity can be really good. But the process by which things become clear, I think, is going to be maybe difficult or confronting for a lot of us. I don't know. Would you agree, Austin, or would you go in a different direction?
I wouldn't disagree with any of that. I would add a couple things. So that Mars-Pluto is then followed by Sun-Pluto, right? And Sun-Pluto basically happens on the full moon, and the full moon is right on top of Pluto. And so really for the first, the full moon is on the 8th. And so really for the first third of July, that's the theme, right? It's Mars, Pluto, Sun, Pluto, Moon, Pluto, right? Like, I absolutely agree. And there, you know, to a certain degree, even at the present moment, which is June 28th, we're already entering that. You know, I said at the end of when we were discussing June last month, you know, I said that, you know, it starts in late June, but this series of planets in Cancer opposing Pluto goes well into early July. One of the things that I see, especially with Sun and Mars opposite Pluto, let's just start with Mars, is that people often deal with feelings of powerlessness. And when we're dealing with Pluto, people love to use the word evolutionary. And I do too, but I mean it in a more strict biological sense. Pluto has to do with slow, permanent changes to the environment. And being creatures that we are in environments, a lot depends on our ability to mutate and adapt to the changing environment. And that can be an inner environment or terrain, or it can be an external one. But, you know, we may be recognizing that, you know, the claws and teeth we currently have are Mars, are not really suited to what the environment is becoming, as indicated by Pluto. And that pings another one of July's ongoing themes, which is the combustion and purification of Mars, which occurs all month. And I have a lot of thoughts about that, but I don't want to jump to that. I just want to say that the Pluto-Mars stuff connects to it. And then, you know, Pluto-Sun with Pluto can temporarily put out or obscure the sun's light, like a dark cloud. And so there can be feeling, it's along the same lines as the feeling powerless. Oh my God, what can I do? I'm not able to do this. This is overwhelming, right? And it's overwhelming until a particular change is made. So those are definitely themes. And also with Cancer and Capricorn being so active, you have matters of security, feeling secure, feeling safe, feeling, you know, safe internally for Cancer and externally for Capricorn. And so those are themes. What I will say is that I can't think of a better full moon to have a horror movie marathon on, or to go, I don't know, get drunk in the graveyard like a teenager. You know, you can move with, just pretend, even if it's not your normal MO, just pretend you're a goth for a couple days. You know, there's a way to move with that and to explore these themes without necessarily just, you know, being in bed and being depressed and crying.
All right. So this is the goth full moon in July of 2017. And I mean, one of the things that's interesting is, so this is the lead in, these lunations this month are the lead in to the eclipses next month, basically, right? So this is our sort of precursor, or our ramping up in some ways to whatever it is those eclipses are going to be about, which so many astrologers Have you guys seen, like, everybody, and it's not just astrologers.
It's everywhere.
I was in like a grocery store the other day, and I found this amazing. It was like a magazine. It was a whole magazine. It must have been one-off because it's not part of a series, but it's like a whole magazine dedicated to the eclipse. And it had a lot of great articles on the eclipse, but I was actually surprised there was an article by Stephen Forrest in the middle of it, which was talking about, like, what does astrology say about this eclipse? So it's been a really interesting phenomenon seeing the eclipse that's about to take place across the entire United States become a broader phenomenon that so many people are paying attention to at this point in time.
I mean, eclipses are a total eclipse of the sun is the single most dramatic celestial phenomenon that we track in astrology.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can find that magazine. You guys keep talking while I do that. And it's unique because we haven't had an eclipse like this specifically. I mean, you know, for U.S. astrologers, that goes across the entire country in a long, long time, right?
It's been about 100 years.
Yeah. So...
Well, and I think part of what makes this eclipse has grabbed the popular attention is that it is visible over so much land that is heavily populated. It is, you know, it's basically going from the Pacific Northwest all the way down, I think, to the Carolinas or Virginia. Austin, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I believe the exit wound is in the Carolinas.
Yeah, the exit wound. So separate to astrology and witchcraft and pagan peeps, which is obviously all of our crew and our tribe, the astronomers will be tracking this as well, because as you said, Austin, this is a visually spectacular and dramatic phenomenon. To have the sun in the middle of the day, in the middle of summer, which is the highest, strongest sun, to have that darkened and for people to be able to stand outside, it is phenomenal. Like it defines that. It will be spectacular. But going back to the origins of humanity, it has been a shocking, and historically eclipses were always cause for concern, because if we look at the sun as the leader figure or that solar kind of divine light, to lose that light, it always sends ripples through the consciousness, I guess.
Yeah, without making any specific predictions, I think it's very safe to say that it will time the peak of the United States leadership crisis, which has been ongoing for several years.
You've used your words very well there, Austin.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I think everyone, thinks about, just because the president, you know, has Leo rising and we're about to have an eclipse, that solar eclipse that goes across the entire United States that's in Leo. So one way or another, that's obviously very much tied into Trump's chart and into the leader of the country's chart at this point in time.
Yeah. And even if we had a different leader, you know, the idea there, I think there's a leadership crisis, which is not the product of any one leader. If anything, our current leader, as well as the people who were running last year, were a product of a systemic crisis, which takes years to develop and will take years to resolve. But I believe that this solar eclipse in Leo, and maybe the one next year too, will certainly time the peak of that crisis.
Definitely. And here is that. I found that magazine. So it looks like this, but it was literally on like a grocery store shelf, like a Sprouts or something like that. And it actually has some really great articles, not just on the astronomy of the eclipse, but also on the history of eclipses. And it has this article by Stephen Forrest talking about the eclipse from an astrological perspective. So this thing is starting to get a lot of coverage in like very interesting ways. And so it'll be interesting, not the shock waves, but the sort of ripple effect that has on some people's awareness of astrology. And it's like, what does that mean? I mean, it almost begs the question, when you're looking at something like that, like, does an eclipse like that, even if you have no background in astrology, what is the significance of something like that? And it sort of leads to or sort of begs or brings up the question about astrology in general.
Mm-hmm. We should probably talk about July.
Yeah, I guess we keep falling into this. Everybody wants to talk about the eclipse.
And so do we.
And we shall, but...
We will. Next month. We're doing August. But Austin, you made a point that I did want to riff off a little, which is the combustion of Mars, which is
I've been obsessing about it.
Yeah, I think in my very detailed notes that I was showing the guys before, this is, I know, I'm like, oh shit, basically from the get-go, right out of the gate of July, Mars has just slipped into that combustion. We get the Kazemi towards the end of the month for a couple of days, but this is Mars combusting Cancer. I mean, there's a sneakiness or a slyness or a defensiveness, protectiveness that is almost percolating in the unconscious, I think. But I'm intrigued as to how this is going to manifest because, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Mars in Cancer to start with. And I think this is adding a layer of complexity.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about this a lot. And the conjunction of Mars and the Sun is, according to the vast majority of traditional authors, the beginning and end of Mars's cycle. It is literally the invisible dark or new moon of Mars's cycle. Whereas the Mars retrograde, which we had last year, is the out of control full moon phase of Mars when he's very bright. And so when you're looking at combustion, right, there's a lot that's said about combustion, burning up a planet and not permitting it to, not permitting it to exercise its function independent of the sun, right? You can't see it. It's, you know, the sun, it's the boss looking over your shoulder. But the flames of combustion, which are often considered negatively, are also in traditional texts considered positively as purifying.
Mm-hmm.
That the sun is bringing that planet, in this case Mars, back into alignment with what the sun represents, which is a centralizing, intelligent, intentional order. Right? The sun is the great conscious despot of the solar system, according to ancient authors. And so even though there may be emotional overheating, right? Sun, Mars, and Cancer, definitely.
Yes.
There will be emotional overheating. The suggestion is that it's purifying, that it's, you know, burning off the dross, that Mars has accumulated, over the last 2 years since the previous conjunction. And I was thinking about metaphors for this. I actually just taught, in my transits class, just last Saturday, I taught a 2-hour class on interpreting Mars transits. And of course, there's a huge difference between a Mars retrograde visiting your chart and a Mars conjunct the sun versus an occidental or an oriental Mars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about about metaphors for what is that meeting between the sun and Mars, that Kazemi. And I was thinking about the metaphors that I tend to use for the retrograde. And a lot of times with the retrograde, I see, we talked about this last year, sort of a berserker Mars, where it's like super out of control or doing absolutely nothing because it's sleepy after berserking. And then it's super out of control. And then I was thinking about it, and with Mars and the sun, I was like, oh, it's the ceremony of being knighted, right? It's when the sovereign is like, tap, tap, arise, Sir Mars. It's the rededicating the warrior to principle. Right. To the principal honor virtue of the sun rather than just Mars going off by itself. And so that became my sort of working metaphor for what that ceremony between Mars and the sun is. And I also think if you're going to, you know, contrast the berserker retrograde Mars, Mars in combustion near the sun like that is, it's like the paladin phase. Right. The like, anybody who plays Dungeons and Dragons will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Kelly's a big Dungeons and Dragons fan.
I'm a huge fan. I'm right there with you guys.
You know, you guys can laugh at me, but we're everywhere.
No, my stepson and my husband probably know. Yeah, watch Caddyshack.
No, but, a paladin, like the sort of Arthurian knight rather than, the blood soaked, you know, ravager.
Yeah.
Right? Cause Mars contains both of those.
Yes.
Right. And so one, we use signs as a key to which one we're going to get, but we also use phases, or we should be using phases.
Yes. Well, and I think I always think too of, well, any planet combust, but if we're thinking Mars, It's like the planet has the cloak of invisibility, to borrow a Harry Potter reference. So the planet is operating, which
that's
is
a metaphor I can get behind, is that the Harry Potter
reference. I thought, and it might, maybe, yeah, for people who aren't Dungeons and Dragons fans. So it's operating, you know, in this, I always think of like spies, for instance, which is a really functional expression of a planet that is in combustion. If it has got clear directives and ability to act, if you're a spy, you don't want to be seen. You want to operate outside the realm of awareness. You don't want that spotlight on you. And so what you're saying there, Austin, about this idea of the Mars-Sun conjunction, the purification and the knighting process, yeah, there's maybe a particular task that needs to happen that has that purification burning off, but also maybe needs to happen in a way that is under that cloak of invisibility. It needs to happen in a private or an off-center stage kind of way.
That's a really important point, just because traditionally that was one of the major interpretations of planets under the beams, is that there's something hidden or sometimes something internalized about the planet, and that sometimes leads to a conflict, sometimes in terms of how to interpret these or how readily apparent it's going to be in terms of what the predicted outcome is going to be when you have something that's otherwise has this indication that's supposed to indicate that part of what's going to happen is behind the scenes or not necessarily fully apparent, because Mars itself is hidden underneath or behind the beams of the sun during this time.
Yeah, a lot of shadowy power plays, certainly on the political stage. I also treat planets which are combust the sun as being eaten by the sun. Mm-hmm. But when the sun eats them, it has them inside it. And yes. So, you know, in some ways, being so close to the sun is like Mars eating a handful, or excuse me, like the sun eating a handful of habaneros. You know, it makes the sun, which is hot, even hotter. There's a general, you know, as far as, you know, tempers flaring, you know, there's a sort of a warning for that all summer, or at least for July and August.
Well, and that's the other point to make too, is that we're going to have two different tones to this Mars combustion, because the first 3 weeks of July, we've got it in Cancer with Mars and the Sun in Cancer. And then last week of July, first couple of weeks of August, it will be in Leo. So definitely going, you know, for the northern summer, the southern winter, but I think it'll feel different or manifest a little differently in the Cancer versus the Leo expression.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and it's also right after it moves into Leo that you actually get the conjunction.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, that's part of, I think, why that knighthood, paladin sort of status, those images came to mind. Because it's Leo, you know, it's Mars in the sign of Leo, right? It's naturally like, you know, there's something that wants to be virtuous about Leo.
Yes.
Right.
When you were saying that, Austin, I was like, oh, that's the Kazemi piece, because that knighting, if you will, it's early Leo with the sense of integrity, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so, you know, the leading up to that is the purification, right?
Yes.
Right. There's all the stuff you have to do to become a knight, right?
Correct.
You have to prove your honor and virtue and whatnot. And then there's also, okay, you've been knighted, but, you know, you don't instantly begin fighting dragons, right? There's that period of sort of coming back down to Earth, which means visually Mars being visible here on the Earth again. And so there's coming out of that somewhat sacred space and then emerging into, you know, dirt and sky and trees again, and be like, okay, so how do I live up to all that? You know, it seemed really clear at the time when I was in the, you know, getting the, what is it, Benedictio Militis. But now I'm like here, and I, you know, these people are assholes, and I'm not feeling quite as noble, or nobility is much harder in practice than in theory, you know?
Absolutely.
That actually brings up a question I had, or a discussion point that's a complete sidetrack or partially sidetrack from what we're talking about here. But in this video recorded and released yesterday on, you know, just the basic traditional distinction between benefic and malefic planets, I wanted to introduce that concept and reassert its like usefulness and validity, because there's a tendency for Venus and Jupiter to coincide with you know, subjectively preferable experiences, and there's a tendency for Mars and Saturn to coincide with subjectively unpreferable or challenging experiences. But I had to sort of write off or say that even traditional authors acknowledged that there are positive or constructive manifestations of Mars and Saturn, mm-hmm. and there are negative manifestations of Venus and Jupiter, and that sometimes you can see that through the configuration or condition in the chart. Now, sometimes one of the modern counterpoints is that those things are up to choice, that it's up to a person whether they're going to manifest one of those placements in a more quote-unquote benefic or quote-unquote malefic mm-hmm. way. But technically speaking, I mean, what are some of the things that you guys look at when trying to determine if a quote-unquote benefic placement or a quote-unquote malefic placement is going to work out in a more positive or negative way?
Phase, houses it rules.
Houses it right. rules. So yeah, houses right. it if, rules. So that actually ties into the whole planetary yogas thing that I was talking about with Ernst earlier this month. Is that, that's yeah, part of actually, what you're referring to?
Yeah, actually, as I told you privately, that came out right in the middle of an obsessive Vedic kick for me. And so I bought that and I've been doing my best to memorize those and look over, put fresh eyes on a bunch of charts that I'm already familiar with. Really good stuff.
You're talking about Ernst's book, Core Yogas?
Yeah, the Core Yogas. And a lot of them, it's like, oh, of course you look at that. I look at that anyway. This is just a more structured way to do that. So one of the things that was interesting from that is, that actually ties into this month. So there's this all, you know, there's this intense, shady Mars purification stuff going on. There's Pluto, but the first week we get, Venus moves into Gemini and Mercury moves into, Leo. And, mm-hmm. and then they form a nice sextile, right? And that, those are not like the signs where they're, you know, have the utmost dignity, but they're both fun. Right. And they're yes. in a sextile. Now, here's where it ties into the yoga. So one of the, one primary set of solar yogas is there a planet on each, is there a planet in the sign before the sun and the sign after the sun? And if so, then you have a planet which basically heralds the day and heralds the night, right? This is something we mm-hmm. look at anyway. And so we've got that, right? Furthermore, the idea that in Vedic astrology, or in a lot of Vedic astrology, there's certainly dispute within it, but Mercury is often treated as a benefic when it is not sharing the same sign with the sun. When it's sharing the same sign with the sun, it loses its benefic power. But if it's before or after, then it gets treated as a benefic. So if we were looking at birth charts, we would see Venus before the sun, heralding the day, and Mercury after the sun, heralding the evening, both having benefic status. And so we have this nice, there's this like, even though there's all this sort of underworldy, deep transformation, crucible, purification, being on fire stuff going on beneath the surface, I think there's actually going to be a lot of fun to be had externally.
Yeah, that sounds related to like the Hellenistic concept of spear bearing and the idea of like a procession of planets that either rise before the sun and act as like spear bearers or bodyguards who march out in front of the sun on the morning of the native's birth and rise before it. Or you have planets acting as like the rear guard and coming out after the sun or setting after the sun on the day of the native's birth and therefore sort of protecting it from the other side.
I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's an evolution or a refinement of that doctrine. And they do the same thing for the moon. And there's a version of that, for the moon as well, right? That, you know, that which precedes the moon's rise and that which comes after it. The Hellenistic version is those trailing after the moon, but it's the same idea, of the sun and or moon's rise being heralded by something and then their setting being heralded by something, right?
Right. I saw that. And he was actually defining that as Kema Dhruma Yoga, which is the term for void of course. It's like a transliteration.
Kema Dhruma is when you don't have anything on either side of the moon and the moon is lonely.
Right. By sign. But it means right. that it's a transliteration of void of course. So that's taking, they're taking the concept of void of course, which in Greek is Kenodromia, and it's been transliterated into Sanskrit as Kema Dhruma, And then,
oh, that's nice.
Conceptually, though, they're using it as a sign-based void of course, so that, as it was defined in Ernst's book, they said there's no planet either in the sign in front of the sun, and there's no planet in the sign behind the sun. So this is kind of interesting to me because it complicates the whole Western issue with the void of course, which is that there's three different definitions. And I'm actually going to do a video on this pretty soon. I have an article on it already on the astrologydictionary.com, but basically there's the original Hellenistic definition of void of course, which is that the moon does not complete any aspect in the next 30 degrees, apparently regardless of sign boundary. There's a later medieval or Renaissance definition, or the modern definition, which is that the moon doesn't complete any aspect until it leaves the sign that it's in. And then there's finally a reinterpretation of Lilly's definition, which holds that the moon is not within orb of completing any aspect, regardless of sign boundary, in the next, you know, whatever orb you're using for the moon. So there's three different definitions. And now with that Indian definition, we throw a fourth one in. So there's four void of course moon definitions.
I think with the Indian thing, I think it's the same concept, but I don't think it's a little different. It's different in a lot of ways than being void of course, because really it's the principle that the moon hates being alone more than any other planet, right? The moon has power to offer every other planet. That's kind of why there are a lot of different electional techniques where no matter what you're doing, even if you're only looking at one planet, you always also look at the moon. It's the idea that the moon hates being lonely. And then there are a variety of cancellations to that. Like, oh, well, if the moon is full, then it's not lonely. And if it's whatever, there are like five or six different possible cancellations. And it's all ways that the moon gets supported. But the moon, you know, both requires and provides support. It needs another planet. I mean, it's literally the Earth's satellite, right? It needs interaction in a way that no other planet does. But anyway, So we've got Mercury and Venus, heralding the day, and Mercury heralding the night. And Mercury is going to get more and more visible in the western sky. We get to the maximum elongation at the end of the month for Mercury, which means Mercury is bright and high in the post-sunset skies. It's going to get. It's this nice counterpoint to the intense and potentially dark stuff that's happening.
Sure. And Kelly, I meant to ask you, to what extent do you use, or what definition do you use of void of course, or do you use that as a concept, like when you're doing elections, or is it something that doesn't play like a huge role for you?
Oh, I do think it's really important, because one of the considerations that I would use for like strength or debility of a planet is the aspects or the relationships. Because I've seen, if you look at the difference between accidental and essential qualities of strength or qualities of weakness, the aspects like the accidental sort of configurations can really boost or give an outlet, provide support to a planet that might otherwise have restrictions. So with the moon, it's funny. I'm like, I don't have a hard and fast rule for this, but if it was more than, say, 12 degrees away from making an aspect to another planet, then I would be starting to think about a different option. If I'm doing electional work with the moon, or trying to time something that's really specific, I will try and get the moon applying within 12 degrees to something helpful. I would avoid, the trick with the moon is Austin saying it doesn't like to be alone. So it's better to have the moon's energy directed towards something than towards nothing. But I mean, you don't want to pick a really stressful something, because even though that can give a focal point, maybe it can cause more trouble than it's worth. So, But I mean, probably the most definition that I would fall back to most quickly is, will the moon make an aspect before it changes signs?
Yeah, that's a good one. The arc of daily motion is a good orb. Yeah. Will it in the next 24 hours hit anything?
Yeah, which gives us up to about 15 degrees if we've got a quick moving moon, 12 to be safe for a slower moon.
So I actually noticed the other day that if I remove things that were discovered in the 18th century and beyond from my chart, my moon is actually super void of course. And your moon. Okay. And it rules my rising. Yeah, I have moon at 16 Gemini, and it wouldn't make an aspect with a planet until 2 Cancer.
Okay, but it is 5 or 6 degrees separated from Saturn, right?
Yeah, it's 2 degrees separated by a square from the sun. That's the most recent aspect.
That's your tightest one. So, mm-hmm. I mean, and that's where, okay, yes, it's not applying to anything, but it is carrying the energy of that recent separation. It's not as strong, maybe.
But it's not totally alone.
Correct. It is not alone.
It's bidding farewell to the sun.
Correct.
It's standing at the end of the driveway.
It still feels the warmth from the hug, basically. Yeah. If they've had their goodbye hug, you're not in the car and pulling out of the driveway yet. So
that's an excellent point.
Yeah. I think those things, if we don't have an applying aspect, do we have something that's relatively close separating? That does make the moon very happy because she'll carry that energy with her.
Well, if you guys feel like it, I'd love to do a whole episode on the void of course moon at some point, just because I'm trying
totally.
I'm pulling together those definitions and just talking about it. Because one of the things is it seems like many of those definitions are relevant. It's not that there's just like one true void of course, but that there's like different phases that are all symbolically significant in different ways and perhaps to different extents. So maybe we could talk about that sometime.
Yeah. Well, in the
we could talk about that for 2 hours.
Because I was just reading this last night. Oh no, no. You know, with the Kimadrama yoga, the moon having no love. What Ernst wrote is that it basically makes everything harder because there's just no support. And it's like, yeah, the good yogas will still play out in their time, but it'll be harder, and the bad stuff will be even harder. And that it's just like a general, like there's no support for the life internally or externally, or there's very little support.
Right. And I love that they have in the Indian tradition in Ernst's book, Core Yogas, where he was talking about those additional mitigating conditions, like the one you mentioned, where if the moon's void, of course, but it's a full moon and the moon is full in its light, then it's a mitigating condition. And therefore it cancels out the void, of course, because we have some mitigations in the Western tradition as well, where Lily and I think Banati says, if the moon is void, of course, that's a negative indication, especially in an election or a horary chart. Unless the moon is in Cancer, its domicile, or Taurus, its exaltation, in which case it cancels out.
Oh, and there's also a cancellation condition where if it's in one of Jupiter's signs.
Yes, if it's in Pisces or Sag, then it's okay.
Then it gets some love.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, talking about different things like that. The idea that there's other perhaps mitigating conditions from the Indian tradition, I think all of that would make for a good show. So anyway, we'll come back to that maybe later in July. So let's get back to the forecast for July. So we've talked about those ingresses. So you guys talked about the Venus ingress into Gemini, which takes place July 4th, the Mercury ingress into Leo, which takes place on July 5th. We touched base on the full moon in Capricorn, which is taking place on July 9th. So we're getting into the mid-month at this point, and that brings us pretty much to that conjunction that we were talking about. So Mars eventually moves into Leo, it looks like July 20th.
Yeah, the middle is its own. The middle 10 days are sort of their own section. It's the last third where it just becomes super Leo-y, super quick. We get on the 20th, boom, Mars moves into Leo. 21st, Mercury conjoins the North Node perfectly in Leo. Then on the 22nd, the Sun moves into Leo. And then on the 23rd, the Sun and Moon align, new moon in Leo. And then on the 26th, the perfect Mars-Sun conjunction in Leo. Right? So it's just like a ton of Leo stuff that happens to kick off that last third.
Yeah,
totally. It's like we go from, wet to dry, or, you know, internal to external. There's a bunch of different metaphors with that Cancer Leo shift. The new moon, which is at zero Leo, I think that's a really interesting one. I mean, the first few degrees of Leo, we're going to have the new moon plus the Sun Mars Kazemi. And, you know, the terms of the very early part of Leo are Jupiter. And I don't know, there's something about the early part of Leo that I think has this noble quality that we alluded to earlier. And we do get a couple of activations of that, very early you know, well, at the end of the month, as soon as the planets hit Leo. I was curious, Austin, about the decan for that early Leo and whether that kind of feeds into that or adds something different.
Well, the decan is ruled either in the triplicity method by the sun or in the descending order method by Saturn. And right. So you don't tend to get the nobility images there. It's the middle decan of Leo, which is Jupiter ruled in both systems, where you get that more triumph of the light nobility stuff. Which isn't, you know, I mean, the first decan of Leo is still Leo and the sun's still there and it's still super strong for the sun. But just image wise. But you know, what's interesting is there's trouble in the Golden Palace this year, you know, we think about the signs as the domiciles of the planets, right? The sun has come back to Leo, but Mars is there and Mars and the sun are working it out, but the North Node's there, Rahu's there, right? The Darkener, literally the devourer of the sun, has set up residence in the sun's palace, right? And so that changes things. You know, one of the, just one particularity of the way I do astrology is I'm very whole sign on the nodes. If you have the sun or moon in the same sign as a node, that matters a lot. I would say anything sharing co-presence with a node matters. Of course, the closer it is, the more important it is. But even if it's 20 degrees away, I'm going to underline that. And so what's really interesting about that, that new moon is, so it's a normal new moon in Leo, right? So starting Leo and who am I really? You know, I need to be more in line with my authentic self. I'm going to, perform my truth and, bring things into order in my life, et cetera, all this normal new moon in Leo stuff. But we get a second new moon in Leo, and that is the giant solar eclipse. Not only do we have an eclipse, but we have two new moons in a row in the same sign, which isn't incredibly rare, but it's certainly not the norm.
It's like the astrological equivalent of a blue moon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's exactly that.
I think I remember we had an argument about that like a year ago because there was an actual blue moon that took place in a month, but you guys are like, that's totally arbitrary because the months are arbitrarily drawn. But this is actually, you know, two new moons taking place in the same sign in a month or 1 month time span.
I think we had that last year. I think there were two full moons in Sag, I think, last June and May. Anyway, but it's unusual. And it's all about Leo. Like, this is where the action is. In many ways, the whole year has been leading up to all this stuff that happens in Leo. And so look at where Leo is in the chart. And the Cancer stuff is important. It's leading up to it. But, you know, Leo is where the Royal Rumble is going to take place, right? I just think it's a really important area. I would say that if I had to pick a single sign that the configurations were most focused on changing, messing with, exploring, going deeper into, et cetera, it would be Leo.
Yeah, I mean, for me, for everybody personally, I would tell people to see where Leo falls in their chart. I mean, for me, from my perspective, from a whole sign perspective, I just say, you know, what whole sign house does Leo occupy? And that house in your chart and that area of your life is about to get a lot of activity, especially if that sign happens to be activated this year through one of the timing techniques like perfections. I would also look at how Leo is activated in your chart. And what sign, using the advanced method of perfections, Leo is activated relative to. So that gets a little bit complicated. I guess I probably can't go into that, but I think you guys would agree basically that a lot of people and some people in particular are about to get a lot of activity in that particular part of their life when you get this huge pile up of planets in the same sign.
Absolutely. Well, and doing such dramatic things. They're not all just sharing the sign. Right. We have that Mars Sun conjunction. That's a rare thing, right? You don't have Mars Sun conjunctions in Leo even every decade, right? And then a total solar eclipse, even if you don't live in the United States, total solar eclipses in the sign of the sun are not that common. And then, of course, Mercury will eventually retrograde back into Leo. There's other stuff, there are accents to it, but there's a lot going on. And, you know, like Chris is saying, if Leo, you know, if Leo is your perfected sign, that's a big deal. But I would also, and Chris, I'm sure you would agree, perfect from both the sun and the moon, as well as the ascendant. And if any of those fall in Leo, you'll probably get a big hit out of this year's sun and Leo period.
Sure.
For sure. I mean, the other thing that I would maybe just add at a more simplistic level is the focus on the fixed signs just through the aspect patterns. So if you know your chart, of course, if you have any of the fixed signs rising, then that's going to put Leo by whole sign into one of the angular houses, which is going to make it a little more dominant. But I think too, if you're a person who's very heavy in Taurus planets or Scorpio planets or Aquarius planets, there is this sort of maybe tension coming in with all these Leo energies with this conglomeration, I guess. I don't even know a word to call this, like a pride of planets maybe in Leo.
Nice.
But, you know, they're going to be squaring the Taurus Scorpio and opposing anything in Aquarius, though, of course, Aquarius is activated once we get to the eclipses anyway. But I think just at a more simplistic level, if people aren't across perfections, that's another way to tap in. But it is going to be all about your Leo stuff this month.
And it's interesting because since this is the lead into the eclipse, this pileup of planets in Leo is also kind of like the initial phase or the starting point of a race and sort of like a sequence of eclipses that are going to take place in Leo over the next year or two. So this pileup for some people might be particularly dramatic, but it's not necessarily a one-off event. It's like the start of a sequence of events that are especially taking place in like 6 month increments.
Yeah, I would say this is the most dramatic scene in that story. But we actually had our first eclipse, which was a lunar eclipse in Leo on about February 10th. And so, you know, that's foreshadowing, both on the wordplay literal level of a shadow falling across the room, it's you know, it's foreshadowing. Like that should give you a hint as to what this sequence is going to be about for you.
Sure. I will just pull that up. That is the day that I published my book, of course, on the
Leo
eclipse on February 10th. It's a fun day to commemorate that back then. All right. And maybe, I mean, last thing that might be relevant is just even using other simple concepts, because that's how you can get more clarity when you're talking about a mundane like event like this, is just layering on concept or basic concept after basic concept. I mean, another one would be sect, which is that generally speaking, like all other factors aside, probably with Mars going through Leo, the people with the day charts might have more challenges or like obstacles that are more serious come up during that part of the year in that specific part of their life. Whatever sign Leo occupies in their chart is indicating a particular part of their life could be more challenging, whereas it might be a little bit more, maybe still annoying, but a little bit more constructive for the people with night charts when they have Mars going through Leo and that big pileup of Leo stuff taking place over the next month or two.
Totally.
Okay. Any other points about that? One of the things I noticed here is, when do we hit the shadow period for the Mercury retrograde?
Oh, yeah, the third week, maybe?
Last week of the month.
So Mercury stations retrograde.
28.
25th or 26th?
Yeah. So I have a thing that I want to say about shadow periods.
Tell us.
They're great. However, the shadow period includes the planet, the Mercury's maximum elongation, which is its own phase. And if you're just seeing it as shadow, you're actually missing something that if you just looked outside would be super obvious and trumps it as an interpretive factor. It's the maximum elongation, which means that it's as bright and high as it's going to get. It's a phase of fullness. Mercury like everything since the Superior Conjunction is like coming to a head. Like you're like, oh my God, I get it now. I have so much to communicate. it's a period of overflowing mentally. And then it, you know, and it sort of gives what it has and then begins dropping down towards the Western horizon very quickly. But recognizing that peak for what it is super important for interpreting it correctly. Like just saying it's in the shadow, which it is and is not wrong, will maybe, how should we say, confuse you if you don't also take into consideration the maximum elongation.
Yeah, that visibility component is a factor that shouldn't be overlooked with that maximum elongation, the brightness. Good point, Austin.
It looks like,
well, go ahead.
So Mercury's going to retrograde back to 28 Leo. Yeah. So it looks like it passes that point and thus begins its shadow period around July 24th when it hits 28 Leo while it's still direct, but preparing for the retrograde station, which it'll eventually hit in Virgo. So once we get to July 24th, it's like the precursor or the beginning of the sequence of events that will lead up to and that will coincide with the Mercury retrograde period, especially if that's an important period for you. That sequence of events will really start happening sometime around July 24th, or at least the precursor to those events.
Yes. The other thing that's happening right around that time, we've got the final sort of larger or more significant aspect of the month, which is Venus opposite Saturn.
That's like a unpleasant day or two.
Yeah. I agree, Austin, it's not like a game changer, but it's going to flavor the mood.
So I was thinking about that, Kelly.
Yeah.
And so what's really interesting is Mercury at the end of Leo trines Uranus the same day.
Yes. Yes.
And so it's like insight and mental breakthrough possibly at the same time as like emotional compression. Now, what's interesting, and so I was thinking about that just in terms of the way it affected Mercury and Venus, and then I sort of flipped that, and I was like, but this is moving, that will serve to move the Saturn-Uranus story along.
Right? Yes.
Saturn and Uranus have been bouncing back and forth between trines, and they've got another one to go before the end of the year. And so it's sort of like relating mentally and emotionally to where you're at in this opportunity to reconcile, you know, your obligations and what you have to do and your necessities, Saturn, with like getting more freedom and choice in your life, and also adapting to things which weren't part of the plan, right? Uranus. And so in some way, like, yes, there's the effect on Mercury and Venus, but it's also them moving the Uranus Saturn story on.
Yes. Well, exactly, because right at the very end of the month, Venus then will sextile Uranus herself. So it is like it's separated by a few degrees and therefore a few days. But I think that's a really good point, Austin. It's just bringing up that story of whatever the Saturn-Uranus trine is about for each person based on chart placement and activation directly. But it is, and the one thing that keeps coming up for me with this Venus in Gemini, just based on what you said earlier, Austin, is this idea that there's a playfulness to Venus in Gemini for most of this month, other than those couple of days when she's directly facing off with Saturn. There's nothing wrong with Venus in Taurus, of course, but she's lighter, that sanguine, maybe flirty or free-spirited vibe we get of her. And I think we're going to finish off July with the Venus-Uranus sextile, which is fun and playful, and there's a little bit of confidence to experiment or to explore. Mercury will be in Virgo by then. The Venus vibe is kind of fun and funky.
Yeah. Well, and that sextile happens, on the 6th or 7th between the two. So we actually,
yes,
in the middle of all the heavy stuff, early on the 7th. So all that heavy stuff earlier in the month, again, it's counterpointed by this fun Mercury-Venus thing, which is nice. And I was thinking about what to say about, you know, heavy Pluto, Mars combustion, blah, 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 which is the first 20 days, right? And so, you know, I think it's really about cleaning up in preparation for what's going to happen. And so what does purification mean? Well, it means like, you know, maybe changing your diet, maybe changing your exercise regimen, maybe, you know, drinking less or smoking less or, you know, whatever habits you have.
Except on the goth full moon, of course.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. You could take, you could take a hallucinogenic and near deadly dose of belladonna if you really wanted to get. Don't do that, anybody. Not recommending that. It's a joke. But the cleaning up, the washing.
It's detoxification. It's more than just a cleanup, isn't it? It's like a deep clean or that more thorough, intense purification.
Go ahead.
Somebody named Peter Liu actually mentioned that earlier in the comment section on Facebook, where he said purifying usually means bringing up the toxins in order to the surface in order to be exercised, basically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. My last column was actually all about washing and using a laundry metaphor, right? Like if you're doing laundry by hand, you soak it and then you wring it out. And then yes. You soak it and then you wring it out and then you scrub it. You don't just like soak it, wring it out and done. Right. And you might have to, you may have to beat it. You may have to scrub it. But it's literally the wash, rinse, repeat, right? The idea of cleaning things, whether it's the fabric, the dirty fabric of your soul or your ragged pair of jeans, it's not a one off. Right. You got to repeat it over and over again, which is why changing habits is important rather than just having a day off, whatever your, debaucherous life is.
Well, and to go back to that comment you just read, Chris, from Facebook, the idea of a detox, for instance, if you think about a physical detox, you often feel worse in the first few days when you start it because all the gunk is coming through. So that may be something to keep in mind too, that you're making good changes or you're stepping into the proverbial laundry, but initially it might feel a little bit worse, but that's only because so much has built up that you've really got to do that deep clean to get to that more purified or clear and clean place. If you give up sugar, for instance, you usually feel like crap for a few days, but then you feel amazing. So it's worth it. So these are good metaphors.
Definitely. And we keep talking about, so it's wild that, the Sun-Mars conjunction in Leo towards the end of July actually takes place really close to Mercury hitting its shadow. And that actually reminds me about the electional chart for this month, which I meant to mention because it actually takes place towards the very end of the month. So let me share my screen in order to show that. So the electional chart for this month. So Lisa did the elections for this month, Lisa Scheim at lisascheim.com. And one of the issues that she ran into, which we're going to talk about on our private patron-only podcast on auspicious elections, where we outline four of the major charts this month. One of the issues that she ran into, which is an issue we've been dealing with in June, is that even though you could use some Sagittarius rising charts where Jupiter is ruling the ascendant and it's a day chart and Jupiter is in the 11th house, for a while now with Mars in Cancer, you've got Mars squaring Jupiter. And so it's really not a chart that you would want to use for the most part because you would have the ruler of the ascendant being afflicted by Mars, which is in a superior position in a day chart. So eventually towards the end of July, one of the things that's nice about Mars going into Leo is that it's no longer in that superior sign-based square where it's overcoming Jupiter in Libra, but now it's just in a sort of sextile, which is not really harmful. So this opens up some Sagittarius rising elections. And even though Saturn is there, in Sagittarius, as long as it's a day chart, that's not necessarily a deal breaker. So Saturn in a day chart, even when angular, is not necessarily a deal breaker. If this is a night chart, that might not be, that would definitely be something we would probably want to avoid. But as a day chart, this is definitely usable. So the electional chart that we wanted to highlight for this month takes place on July 28th, 2017, starting at 4:21 p.m. I have it set for Denver, Colorado, but you could basically set it for around the same time, whatever your location is, and just try to adjust the ascendant until you have about 9 degrees of Sagittarius, give or take, rising. And that'll give you essentially the same electional chart that we have for this month. So the chart features Sagittarius rising, Jupiter in Libra in the 11th whole sign house in a day chart. So it's in the place of friends and alliances and groups, and therefore it's a chart that's very much focused on social matters and alliances and friendships and things of that nature. The moon is also in Libra, and it's applying to a conjunction with Jupiter in the 11th house. So we've got an auspicious moon-Jupiter conjunction that's taking place on July 28th, and we're going to focus on that and use that by making it prominent in the chart and having the moon applying to the ruler of the ascendant. Mercury is also relatively well-placed, even though it's getting ready to station retrograde. We've got it in Virgo in the 10th whole sign house, largely unafflicted. Venus is helping out a little bit in Gemini in the 7th whole sign house by overcoming through a superior sign-based square Mercury, as well as a superior sign-based trine with the moon and Jupiter. Let's see, what else? Mars is, of course, in that close Sun-Mars conjunction with the Sun in Leo, but at least it's separating at this point rather than still applying. So there's something about that energy that's passing away or flowing away into the past rather than still building up in the future. Let's see what else. I think that's it. So this is the main election we wanted to highlight this month. Do you guys have any comments about that chart?
I think that's a fine looking chart.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the best looking electional charts I've seen for a while.
You like it? Good. Yeah. You're usually a little bit skeptical sometimes about our electional charts, sometimes with good reason. Other times, I think you have a little bit higher standards sometimes for electional charts. So hearing you think that this is a good chart is high praise.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah, no, this is a great looking chart. I'm going to have to do something on the 28th.
Yeah, it even speaks to some of the things we were talking about before around the moon. It is, you know, tightly applying to a benefic. So that is a massive good thing for the moon. The house placement is strong. The phase of the moon is strong. And then, of course, you've got Jupiter, A, as the chart ruler, B, in the house of its joy, but also receiving that push or that extra support from the moon. So, yeah, I think this is a wonderful chart. I mean, I'm always of the view when you're doing electional work that a little bit of good can go a long way and really help. But if you can get a lot of good or a lot of function into an electional chart, even if there's one prickly bit, it just becomes a thorn in your side that you don't even really have to focus on because there's so much that is coming forward. I'm with Austin actually. I'm like, I'll be stealing this chart for something later in the month. It's really good. Even having the sun exalted, not in rulership, sorry, but in the house of its joy as well. Mercury, I mean, there's so many planets in rulership. Maternus talks about, like, you know, if you have one planet in its own sign, you know, this is a good thing. But if you have two or three or four, you know, nearer to the gods must you be. So whenever you can throw that into charts like this, this is great.
Definitely. Yeah, I was really impressed when Lisa came up with this chart. And she's actually got three other charts that she found for July that we're going to talk about in what we're calling, we've actually given it a name now, and we're calling it the Auspicious Elections podcast. And Paula Bellomini actually created some nice little branding for us. So let me show off our page there. There it is. So if you go to theastrologypodcast.com and you go to the elections tab, you'll see the whole page and a little preview for our Auspicious Elections podcast, where for 45 minutes, Lisa and I do a little webinar where you have both either an audio download or a video download. And we talk about the four most auspicious electional charts we found that month. And we give them to you ahead of time if you're a patron of the Astrology Podcast on the $5 or $10 tier. So you can, all you have to do in order to find out more information about that is go to our subscription page or sign up at patreon.com/astrologypodcast. All right. So that's the auspicious electional chart for this month. And that kind of brings us towards the end of the month. What are some other things that we haven't talked about? Somebody, Kelly, you mentioned the Jupiter-Pluto square. Have we touched on that?
Look, we haven't. Somebody mentioned it on Facebook. I think we'll probably cover it next month because it is exact next month. The one, unless either of you guys really want to chat about it, the one other aspect, I know Austin is giving me faces. So the one other aspect I did want to mention, which your electional chart reminded me, it's one kind of good aspect, which is Venus trine Jupiter. So that, I think, look, I'm sure she's going to be close to squaring Neptune, maybe as well, but I still think a Venus Jupiter trine with Jupiter in the sign of Venus is worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. I've got that coming in around the 17th, 18th of July. So separate to all the other stuff, which of course we've gone into in a lot of detail. The other thing I did think about that Moon-Jupiter conjunction at the end of the month, I hadn't thought about it in the context of an election, but it is a waxing moon conjunct Jupiter. And that's always nice. So those two activations, I think, are a couple little bright spots.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. All right. And the last thing, I mean, you know, you guys have kind of mentioned this, but just that, you know, it's a very fiery month with all those planets and fire signs. And that was something we mentioned in the yearly forecast, is just this entire year, especially in different spots, seemed like it had huge emphasis on fire sign placements. But this month is really one of the focal points for that, essentially, right?
More so next month. But I feel like Mars combusts Sun all month. Qualifies as secret fire sign planets. they'll be boiling the water, but next month it gets even firier.
Yeah, I think it's the Leo season, if you like, that is the fiery period there, because we've got the Sun, Mars. You know, they're both dry planets, Mars in an extreme way, the Sun slightly more functional. But I mean, when I do fertility work with clients, too much sun doesn't work, basically. So to have those two planets together. So I think that the more accurate time period is the Sun in Leo, which is going to be, of course, late July and then the first 3 weeks of August.
Yeah.
That's definitely fire on top of fire. To have the Sun and Mars together in a fire sign with all the other, you know, with Saturn in Sag and Uranus in Aries, plus throw in the eclipse, which is, I mean, we're having two lunations in that Sun in Leo period where the Sun and Mars are basically conjunct. We've got that very early in Leo new moon, which the Sun and Mars are conjunct. And then we have the eclipse in August, which it is an eclipse, but Mars is in the mix too, which I think is part of what adds to what would already be dramatic just with the solar eclipse.
Definitely. All right. Are there any other major alignments or any things that we wanted to touch on before we start wrapping this up, or any, I'm trying to think if there's any aspects? I mean, eventually we've already mentioned Mercury goes into Virgo by like the 25th. That was in the electional chart. At the very, very end of the month, Venus goes into Cancer. But I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Just on the fire theme, obviously now I've become obsessed. We only have Mars in fire sign twice this year. The first time was earlier, like when Mars was in Aries, so late Jan through to March, early March, late Feb. And then this is the final time. Like after this, Mars won't come back to the fire sign. So it is the burning, if you like.
All right. Excellent. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode then. So yeah, thanks everyone for doing this. Thank you both for joining me on this little experiment in live streaming. I think it went well, and we got a decent sized audience following along with us today as we record this episode, which is usually kind of like a solitary thing where it's usually just like the three of us recording it together and we crack, you know, off color jokes, or at least the two of you do, and then edit it out in post production. But today was our first live episode.
We had to behave. No, it's nice to have everyone sort of comments and stuff, like to be able to check in with Facebook. So yeah. I don't know. What are you seeing there, Chris? There's probably some cheeky comments coming through. But
No, it's good. So good. If people enjoyed this, definitely let us know, and we'll keep doing it again in the future. If you want to support the podcast, of course, sign up and become a patron, since that really helps us to keep the lights on and keep doing new episodes on a month-by-month basis and expanding and improving the show. You should, of course, check out Austin's website at austincopic.com and some of those classes that he mentioned coming up, and Kelly at kellysastrology.com, right?
Yes, that's right.
And you can find out more information, of course, about the podcast at theastrologypodcast.com, and you can subscribe at theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe, and you can find out more information about me at chrisbrennanastrologer.com. All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining.
I want to say something really quickly. Yeah. Isn't this our 2-year anniversary of doing the podcast?
Oh, you're right. This is actually the 2-year anniversary when we first started doing the forecast episodes.
Yes.
Yeah, it was at the end of June. I think it was June 26th, maybe.
Yeah, because you were actually visiting me. Arising. Austin was visiting, and Kelly, you and I had just started doing it like a month earlier. right?
Yes.
And then Austin happened to be in town visiting me. And so we were just like, Austin, you feel like joining us? And we'll do our astrologer three-way. And it worked out.
That's been great. I'm a lucky girl. What can all I right. say?
So we're moving into our third house perfection then.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I'll take that.
Yeah. And
we
this
survived
is our
the second house.
And we did it. We started our first solar return, our solar return with that third house perfection by doing a live stream in front of whatever 100 people. So that's a pretty good start to a new year.
I think so. And it's 100 people to start, guys, because keep in mind this video will stay on Facebook. And over the next few days, there'll be a lot more eyes on it than just the people that were here live.
Excellent. And I will release a high quality version of the audio to patrons here in the next day or so. The high quality video version or audio version will also be available on the podcast website, theastrologypodcast.com. The video will be posted to YouTube and hopefully a high quality version. And we will come back again next month to do another forecast and to talk even more about the eclipse, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we'll be talking a lot about the eclipse.
All right. Well, we'll be preparing for that. So in between now and then, everybody have a good month. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.